So welcome to the Epping Bag Show. We're back again for another hour. Unfortunately, Courtney can't join us until next week. She's on call tonight, so she'll be with us next week. But of course, as usual, joining me, my co-host, of course, top left with me is Emily. And she's been told to be on her best behaviour tonight. Bottom left, of course, in her onesie. Did that win the poll?
It did win by 57%. It's a landslide, practically.
Ali in her West Ham onesie. And why is she in her onesie? Well, of course, the living legend himself, Mr. Tony Gale, joins us. A great, one of the best guys in non-league football, let me tell you. And
I'll tell you, I can't fit into a onesie, that's for sure.
My uncle is fuming that I'm talking to you tonight, Tony. Yeah. He's a massive West Ham fan, and he is fuming.
Give him my regards.
I will. I'll tell him.
And these young ladies all week, Tony, as I said to you on the phone call earlier on, they've been tweeting the show out tonight. So excited to meet you tonight and ask you a few questions and stuff as well. And it's about the third or fourth week we've been doing the show. We're getting great figures as well. And the girls, it's all down to the girls. And the girls are doing a fantastic job of co-hosting the show with me. And all praise to you girls. You're doing brilliantly. So keep going. So floor's yours. Tony's there. You ask the questions.
Floor's yours. Where you go?
Oh, I'm so nerve-wracked. It's awful, isn't it?
I'm going to let Ali fangirl to her heart.
This is the quietest I've ever been to.
I know. It's shocking. I mean, it's shocking. I think I'll go with the West Ham stuff first, really. So, obviously, a massive West Ham fan myself. For you personally, what makes you love West Ham so much?
Obviously, because I was there 10 years. But even when I started my career at Fulham, when we played West Ham, there were special games. I don't know if you're young enough to have known Upton Park as it was, are you?
I am indeed.
Yeah, it was probably pyjamas instead of onesies then that you were going. But anybody, as you did with your family, who went to Upton Park will realise what a special place it was. So I always loved playing there. Yeah? Mm. And although I was at Fulham and played, well, I think I spoke to Dave before, and I was lucky. I was in a team at 16, and I left after playing about 330 games, and I was only 24. Then I had 10 years at West Ham. I was so privileged to play at two really lovely clubs and, you know, finished luckily at Blackburn when we won the Premier League. But West Ham, it's special, especially for you guys, the supporters.
Oh, honestly, I'll be honest. When I was very young, I got into West Ham because my uncle took me because I was David Beckham mad.
So he said, "You know what, Ali?" West Ham?
No, he didn't. So he said, "You know what, Ali? I've got you tickets for your birthday to go and watch West Ham versus Man United. You can see David Beckham."
Oh,
the game was 5-3. Fell in love with West Ham. Straight in the club after the game. I had a shirt. My dad, Craig, he's a Spurs fan, unfortunately. My poor dad, it broke his heart. But it's the best option, I think, isn't it, really? So what's your thoughts on West Ham this season, do you think, Tony? How are we doing this year?
Excellent. I mean, for the team that they've got, you wouldn't say they're a team of superstars. David Moyes is just getting the best out of... I'm not saying what he's got, because that sounds a little bit derogatory of him, but they're a good bunch of boys. But for the first time in years, we've got an honest team. An honest team who will put the hard yards in. And it's taken David a little bit of time to, you know, weed out the slackers, shall we say, the guys who wouldn't run, who thought they had a little bit of flair and, you know, a little bit, you know, tippy-tappy. But these boys are grafters. So if they go down, they'll go down fighting. And you can't say they're, like, outstanding players. The likes of Dawson, who's a journeyman, you know what, and Kufau at right back, he's a steady right back, Cresswell's steady. But the whole team is playing to its ultimate. But I do think they're being helped by the fact that there's no crowds at the moment. Mm. Because I don't know if you girls... did you go to non-league games when there was no crowds?
Yeah. It's a couple, it's awful. Yeah.
It's awful, isn't it? It's awful.
Cree haven't got a massive fan base anyway. we were a little bit quieter at home at the best of times. But some of the bigger games, it's such a shame to lose that atmosphere, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, when you go, like, I'm commentating every week, you know, so doing a Prem game every week. So I'm doing all the grounds, and it's just got, it's like watching a match with Sunday morning crowd there, you know, when people are shouting and hollering on the line, the coaches, and you've got various directors from clubs who are getting involved, and you can hear everything that's being said, which is good, which is good for people who want an insight into what's being said on touchlines and everything. But it's kind of not the same. It's not the same, you know, at the moment, but we're doing well. So I don't care what it's like. Because everyone else, particularly Spurs fans, have got to keep quiet at the moment, haven't they?
Yeah, I think they have to, really.
Well, I'm a Liverpool fan, Tony, so I'm really keeping my mouth shut at the moment.
Thoughts and prayers, Em. Thoughts and prayers, mate.
It's, I mean, Henderson now, he's the latest. As you know, you girls physios, I mean, Henderson's looks like he's out for a couple of months. They got long-term injuries there, haven't they? That's a struggle, real struggle.
But it's a struggle on the injury front, but I think as well Liverpool are really struggling in the background. I tweeted about this the other week and I made no bones about it. Like, Jurgen Klopp went out and did a post-match interview the week his mum was buried, and he couldn't make the funeral because of COVID restrictions on travel. And like, journalists, people on Twitter, the lovely trolls on Twitter were like, oh, he's so miserable unless he's winning. Oh, he's this, he's that. And I was thinking, I would not, under any circumstance, leave work and do a post-match interview the week my mother was buried. I'm sorry. And he shouldn't be made to. And obviously, Alisson has lost a parent this week as well. It's like, I'm not making excuses, but I mean, yeah, the injuries are hard to get over, but it must be so difficult having a job in that position. That's such a high-profile job, everything's high profile for him at the moment, considering Liverpool broke the 30-year curse. And my heart is broken for them more than anything. Like, the losses are coming thick and fast, but I'm a Liverpool supporter the last 30 years. I'm used to it.
Yeah, but, you know, you imagine if you're the manager and your team's losing at the moment, as Liverpool have been doing, your job as a manager is to come in, get them upbeat. And that's why Jurgen Klopp's so brilliant normally. You know, there's never down.
100%. But at the end of the day, Tony, as a person, like as a human being yourself, if you're that manager and you've just had a loss like that, it's really hard to get yourself up, let alone 21 lads looking at you for inspiration. So I do feel for him as such, but he is a great manager. He's the best thing to happen to Liverpool, and he's such a good character.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky because I get to sort of talk to some of the chaps who are in and around Liverpool and in and around the staff, in and around the players. And I don't know anyone who's got a bad word for him in Liverpool Football Club. You know, my old manager, Kenny, who was Kenny Dalglish, who was, you know, like, he's a hero.
I've heard of him, Tony. I've heard of him.
He loves him. He loves him. Yeah. He absolutely loves Jurgen Klopp, you know. And
everybody is
feeling for him at the moment because, as you say, you lost a loved one, particularly one of your parents, and you've got to be the cheerful guy going in. Who cheers up the one who's doing the cheering up? I don't know. That's difficult, isn't it?
And he spoke very openly in... sorry, I've gone off West Ham here a little bit, but...
I noticed
him. He spoke really openly in The End of the Storm, the new Liverpool documentary. He spoke very openly about losing his dad quite young. And he kind of said, like, oh, I wish my dad was still around because I'd do things so differently. And I was thinking, oh, that must be ringing so true to him. At least he's his mum. And now... it's like, you know, it's so hard. Everything that's going on in the world, I sympathise with the guy, I really do. But he is a great, great man. And I really hope this bad spell doesn't affect his future at Liverpool.
Well, that's
because football is fickle.
That's what people forget, that, you know, footballers are footballers, but they're also, you know, they're also human beings and they've got emotions and you're feeling up, you're feeling down. You know, you're going into games and you could have had a loss in the family or you could be particularly on an up moment. But everything in the last couple of seasons has gone for Liverpool and it's gone in the right way. Champions League, Premier League, they were great. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. But this time, whatever could go wrong has gone wrong. And it is so difficult to turn around. But they'll be back because he's a great manager and they've got great players.
Tony, I mean, the last night, I mean, I think there's going to be, for West Ham, there's going to be a great game of football coming up, I think, from what they were saying on BT last night, coming up very shortly, when West Ham take on Leicester City after last night. Did you see the clips from last night?
Yeah. I mean, West Ham, Man City at the weekend, you mean, Dave?
No, Leicester City, because I don't know if you saw last night, at the end of the Leicester City game last night against Slava Prague, Is it Souček?
Souček and Kofel.
He's actually live on Facebook with the team. Last night, and he's in a Slavia Prague shirt, which is quite funny.
Those two boys are a breath of fresh air at West Ham. I mean, they are, aside from the manager, those are the two boys that have turned the football club around because of their professionalism. Eastern Europeans, you know, and they are so hungry to play football, so committed to what they're doing. And they're the boys who come in on their day offs, and they're the boys who are making the other boys feel guilty, and they're coming in as well. So it's just getting that extra little bit out of all the other players, particularly Souček in the middle of midfield, because he's the one in there with Declan. And, you know, Declan's needed a little bit more help. Mark Noble's coming a little bit to the end of his days. But he had been absolutely outstanding. Those two, I don't think, have missed a minute, Declan and Souček. And the way he went off injured in the last game, cut his eye, came back on, that was a little bit of old school. I've got a couple of, look, I've got a couple of stitches here and a broken
nose.
That
means he passed his concussion test, Tony. That's all that means.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's protocol now. But he had to go up and have stitches, didn't he? He had stitches, which is brilliant to see. But those two boys have turned it around as far as the professionalism in the football club's gone.
It just feels like, I'm going to say the old West Ham, no disrespect to the teams that have gone in recent years, but that old atmosphere of being like, you know what, no matter who you are, we're going to beat you. Whether it's the first minute or the last minute, we're going to battle for each other. We're going to give you a great game. And it's kind of what I said, back to that 5-3 game. We may have lost 5-3, but generally I left the ground saying, I love this team. Who are they? And Uncle went, let's go to the club shop quickly while we've got you in the... And I went, honestly, I love watching them in the playoffs that year. Honestly, I can't tell you how much I fall in love with that club because it's just that battle atmosphere of being the underdog. But no matter what, they always came up on top, even when they lost.
There was that spell, wasn't there, of playoff for West Ham and the cup final as well. Yes. So we seem to be at Cardiff every year, didn't we? For 3 years, I think it was two playoffs and a cup final. So I'm sure you had a couple of nice days out like I did going to watch them. And we suffered with a cup final, suffered against Palace. We lost, didn't we?
Yeah.
But we beat Preston, didn't we? And then we'd done the Wembley one after that against Blackpool. I mean, Wembley was the ultimate, wasn't it? That was, as far as I was concerned, I must have met everyone who was anyone who supported West Ham, played for West Ham on that day. And I was there from right early in the morning till late at night, because we hung around and had a drink there as well. Yeah. And what made it even better, I don't know if you remember, do you know what made it better? Chelsea beat Bayern Munich and Spurs didn't qualify for the Champions League.
One question, you brought Wembley up there, and I've got somebody sent a question as well, which I'll ask you as well. But for me, I was lucky enough and old enough to do the tour of the old Wembley, and lucky enough to, when we went to the Isthmian League Wembley, one of the Wembley bits around Wembley, we went to the new tour. And I must admit, I was quite, how can I put this, compared to the old Wembley, I was quite disappointed with the new Wembley. Yeah. It didn't seem to have the same atmosphere as when he walked into it. It didn't seem to have that sort of same atmosphere as the old one. I mean, do you feel the same or do you think it's...
Yeah, a little bit. I think it's a bit like with West Ham's new ground and West Ham's old ground. All right, okay, the new ground's got everything but a good view. You know, you're miles away from it. Yeah. But everything within that ground is first class, the London Stadium. But Upton Park, you know, okay... Look, what do you want when you go to a football ground? You want atmosphere, don't you? You want to feel it. You want to really feel it. And the old Wembley had that feel that the new Wembley hasn't quite got. Hasn't got the facilities that the new Wembley's got. But it's really hard to recreate. And do you know what? I think it's the supporters, the current supporters as well. Mm. They kind of changed. Because as years gone back, supporters changed. It's got a little bit more corporate. It's got a little bit like... half a corporate and half a fans. Whereas it was all before, it was three quarters of it was fans, you know what I mean? And it was like full on and everything was, there was that rivalry, wasn't there, within a ground and that atmosphere. I mean, I'm sure you've all felt it when you've gone to big games. And, you know, I was lucky to run out in front of it and running out of Upton Park, it never failed to put the hairs up on my neck, never failed.
How was it running out to bubbles at Upton Park?
We, I don't think we ever played Bub. It sort of came out a little bit before the game. Do you know what? We never used to warm up. We used to warm up under the stand. There was a little gym. So we used to warm up in the gym under the stand. Like players go out now and they do everything, don't they? I think I'd have been knackered in the warm up. But but we used to train under the ground. And then as you come out, of course, you're hitting the sound.
Yeah.
Bang. You know, whereas if you're on the pitch warming up like they are now, fans are dribbling in, and it ain't quite got the same effect as coming out at 5-3. You come out 5-3 and then bang, it hit you. Mm. Especially on a night match, you know, when everybody was coming home from work from the city, all coming, you know, coming down to Upton Park, the away fans were all there early and it was filling up and you could just feel it, you know, just feel it. And you could hear it downstairs in the dressing room. It was coming through. And it, you sort of built yourself up. It's a little bit antiseptic now, the way things have gone with warm-ups and everything, because you bang, you're just out there all the time, aren't you? Mm. That's your fault, you physios.
I know.
You into the game.
well, funny you say that, Tony, because I'm going to bring up a Spurs player now.
I used to work
with Mickey Hazard, and
he cracked
me up. He was like, I used to go out like 10 minutes before the game, have a kick, about a little stretch and come back in. And I was like, how did you get away with that? It was literally, he said, I hated warming up, didn't enjoy it. 10 minutes before the game, back in, done.
Oh, what a player he was, though, Mick. He was a top player. I mean, I played, you know, we've all got a little bit older now. We all play golf together. The West Ham players, Spurs players. So we all go to these charity events through the summer. So we're quite often bumping into each other. We don't even warm up for golf.
Well, Mickey's a top bloke, and when it came to youth football, he coached the Sevenoaks under-18s. I have never seen a better coach. Like, he's amazing, fantastic.
We got Andrew Golins coming in. He said, hi Tony, which away grounds did you used to fear going to play at for the home support atmosphere?
You know, I never feared any ground. I prefer the atmosphere to be full on, even if, you know, we were playing at somewhere like Millwall. You knew the Millwall West Ham rivalry, and it was like you kind of got that fierceness, and it got you even built up for it, you know, where you had to come down rather than build yourself up. So I liked them all. They're all good. I mean, Leeds, no one knows about Leeds. They don't hardly get a mention, but playing at Elland Road in front of a packed house, that was brilliant, because they hated London teams, you know, and London teams hated Northern teams, didn't they, the way it was. And when you went out, it was fierce. The first 10 minutes, you couldn't put your foot on the ball. You certainly had to play long, turn teams round and try and grow into the game. But they were all brilliant. Man United, Liverpool, Leeds, Arsenal, Spurs' old ground, White Hart Lane. I know the new one's lovely, but the old one was terrific as well. Every one of them had a fierceness about them. So if they're saying a favourite ground, not a fiercest ground, a favourite away ground to go to, I think it might be Liverpool, unfortunately.
I must admit, we went on holiday a couple of years ago, went to Wales, and we skipped over and went back into and did a tour around Anfield. It's always a ground that I've always wanted to go round, and it was completely empty. We just walked around, you know, went down round on the tour. And I must admit, the minute you walked out, even in through the stand, and they took you into the stand where the directors were, and then you came out underneath the I just had goosebumps. And it's just a really sort of weird place. And it's something about it, really iconic. And as soon as you sort of walked out of there, really did give me goosebumps just walking out into that stadium. And I'm an Arsenal fan, and we had our best day ever at Anfield in 89. But you just walk out there.
Before my time, David. I'm just pretending.
We'll swiftly move on, Dave. So I've got a question for you when it comes to ladies, because some gentlemen's decided to put a comment on here, and I will read the comment out. And
it's not derogatory.
Well, it is a little bit. And
bring it on!
This is why I want to bring it up, because it does really cheese me off when I see comments like this from quite a lot of people, and it does annoy me. But he's put on here, his gentleman's name is Patrick, and he said, why do women comment on football? Later on when I replied to it, it's a bit more of a fiercer comment coming back, that they know F all about football.
Oh, that's harsh. I mean,
how many times has he played a Highbury? Because I have.
I mean, ask Ali and Emily. I mean, they're just as passionate as football as men are. You know, ladies' football, I do agree, is different. It's slightly at a lower pace, and the power is not quite as much. But I mean, I used to watch a lot of ladies' football because my boy used to train the Chelsea reserve team. So I got a good insight in the ladies' football. So what I found with the ladies, technically, I thought they were very good. Their pass appreciation was very good. You know, like silly things like in non-league with us, player comes to get a throw-in, bang, he throws at him hard. No, the ladies would throw him properly on the volley. They'd knock it back how the thrower would like to receive it. So I loved all the little technical bits about it. They lacked a little bit of power, I do agree. So the 50, 60-yard balls, you know, and the way some of the guys kick it, the ladies can't do it because of the power. The goalkeepers, I think, probably amongst the lot, that's where it's never going to be as good as the guys because, you know, you watch even the international goalkeepers when I'm watching international football. But now to say that they know nothing, that's not very nice. And also, I've got a ladies' team. I'm chairman of Walton Casual. So we've got a ladies' team who play at the same level as what our first team does. Level 3, you know, but, you know, coming down from the professional side. And I love watching them play. They play on a Sunday. And to watch our girls play, we've had them for 2 years now, 2 or 3 years. I get as every much enjoyment. I get enjoyment of seeing their faces, they're enjoying the game of football, as I do with our boys. I get more annoyed with our boys. I've probably got a little bit more patience with the ladies, but I get more annoyed with our boys. It's funny, but I love watching it. And I've got to say, it's different. It is different. There's no beating about the bush. It is different. But to say that they know nothing or whatever, that's terrible. And these girls involved in physios, we got a lady physio at our place, you know. She's terrific. You know, her and her partner do the physiotherapist job between them, Sam and Zoe, and they're terrific. And we've had lady physios about the last 3 or 4 years. So
your son tried to recruit me, Tony. Anthony tried to recruit me back in the day.
Did he really?
I know Anthony. I've known Anthony for years. I met him when he was training at the Millwall Academy in Eltham.
Oh,
I've known him, and I will never forget when he was manager of Staines. He came to Phoenix and bet a 6-0, and I just didn't want to talk to him after that. He was like, "See you, love." I was like, "Oh, see you, Anthony."
On the old phone, delete number.
Literally, don't know that person. Block.
Yeah.
Present company excluded, of course. I mean, you've got somebody like, you know, Alex Scott, one of the best summarisers, you know, there is at the minute, for me personally, and not just because she's an ex-Arsenal player, but she knows what she's talking about. Does she not, Tone, or is it just me?
Yeah, I think she does. But, you know, I think, you know, if it was Alex Scott and Graham Souness, I'd have Graham Souness all day long because Graham's done it at the professional level in the men's side of the game. I think Alex exactly knows what she's talking about, no doubt about it, because she sees enough football to talk about it. And it's like the lady correspondents in the newspapers. There's some great lady reporters in the newspapers, which have got as much right as the men are reporting on it. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't say she's one of the top ones, Dave, because I think she's been about for maybe a year or two, and there's guys that have been doing it a lot longer. So I judge them, not because they're a lady or a man, I judge them on their input and what they're saying. I don't judge her as a lady. I just judge her as a pundit. Is that fair enough or not?
Yeah,
that's how I see it.
I mean, if with that though, I mean, are you surprised with me being in football, you know, non-league football as well for some time now? Are you quite happy to, you know, and quite excited to see the ladies, especially physio-wise, coming into the game? Because it seems to be, I said to ladies before, when I first was in, you hardly ever saw a lady physio. Now it's quite a common thing now that there's more and more lady physios coming
in. Yeah, physio side of it, fitness side of it. You've got the, now we've got the guys in the stand doing all the data as well. The girls get involved with that as well. So we got an academy where we're trying to introduce it. So we got ladies in our academy as well as boys. So we're also looking at media training for them as well. So yeah, all equal, you know, but I would certainly, I mean, if Anthony said to me, "Oh, I've got Emily or Ali coming down," oh, I ain't got, yeah, no
Tony
problem.
Be like, "No, Anthony, no, you don't."
as, as, long, as long as they do the job, and I'm sure they will do the job, that's great. And that's what we got with Sam and Zoe. I mean, Zoe's terrific. Every bit as good as Sam, you know?
But I agree with Tony on that perspective when it comes to women in football, as in the strength, the power. I mean, it's not rocket science. I mean, if I stand beside you, Tony, and kick a ball, you're clearly bigger and stronger than me. You're going to kick it farther. It's not rocket science. And that doesn't offend me in the slightest. What offends me is when people go, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, do you know what the offside rule is? And I think, and no. Normally, it's people like that who are standing on the sideline drinking tins of Red Stripe who don't have a clue about football, or armchair supporters who are like, what do women know about football? Like,
well, you're watching it all the time. Mm. You're going to watch your professional team play in Liverpool or West Ham. And then, of course, you're doing it at a non-league level. So it's these, the eyes, that gets trained to a pace of a game. So now you're getting trained to a pace of a game with watching men. So when you go and watch your non-league teams play, the men, and then go and watch a ladies' non-league team, you'll see it through a different pair of eyes, don't you? And it's the same when I watch our non-league boys, and then all of a sudden I'm doing a commentary for a Premier League game. All of a sudden, I'm looking at avenues where they're going to be passing where my boys wouldn't be passing. So it's about these getting trained. And I mean, you two girls watch enough non-league football now that your eyes are getting trained to it. You're getting trained to it. And also the fact that you're watching Premier League football when you get the chance, they become attuned to that because your eyes get used to the pace of it. You know, and I always say, trust these. I can't trust that. I ain't got nothing up there. But trust these.
Come on, Ali. You're full of it this week.
I know. You know what? The comment from Patrick doesn't get to me, but it's just a shame, isn't it? It's a shame to have situation where somebody thinks that that's an appropriate and kind thing to say. I think we all talk about how important things like mental health and mental well-being and being kind and nice, particularly online, given some situations that have happened recently online at quite high profile, and yet someone thinks that's an okay thing to say. I mean, everyone's entitled to an opinion. I think I don't need to... My knowledge of football doesn't need to be addressed by anybody, really. I know what I know, and I know what I know in physio, and I think if Patrick wants to think that, he's more than welcome to. I wish him all the best. And I wish him all the best. And thank you for viewing today. One of my likes on the view, so good luck.
He can't do for that shit. He's fucking watching the programme.
You know what? It's one of those things, isn't it? I think the football's a game full of opinions, and I'm sure people will turn around and say that people like Klopp, who's clearly amazingly good at what he does, but doesn't know nothing about football as well. So it is what it is, Dave. We'll leave it there, I think, on that one. Bless him.
No, and I've got. If the ladies were at my game and they said something to me about my game, about my team, I'd talk it through. If Zoe's talking to me about injuries and like who's got to be easing up and training, going ahead of the next game, I'm not ignoring Zoe. I'm giving her as much respect as I give to Sam, who's her other physio and her partner. Actually, I think Zoe's the boss because I think Sam's a little bit of a wimp.
Poor Sam.
But I think as well with this whole, like, women don't know what they're talking about. I'm going to leave it at this one. But I think this whole, it's quite a generational thing. One of my mates, bless him, he's a professional footballer, and his uncle sadly had a stroke. And he asked me to help him out with his rehab. And I said, yes, no problem. So we used to do rehab twice a week and I used to go and see him. And he used to love watching his nephew's football. And we used to like send him good luck messages and blah, blah, blah. And he said to me one day, it was when I was at Brentwood. He went, you know, I always follow Brentwood's success. And I know you're really, really good at what you do. But I just can't get my head around women in football. Now, bless him, he is 82 years old. And I genuinely think half of this is a generational thing, not really sexist or anything. It's just generational. And I know my granddad, bless him, if he was still alive, he would have an aneurysm at the way I live my life and work in men's football. He'd be like, that's not right.
It's drinking him. Huh? Is that just the drink drinking, though, isn't it? Not the football.
Oh, it's the football, the drinking, the fact that I don't have a fella, I'm not married, I don't have kids, he would have an aneurysm.
Well, we got Lorraine at us at Walton Casual. She's our secretary, so she virtually runs the club anyway, Lorraine. So, and then we got Kelly Jade. She runs our academy, so we got a lady running the academy. So we're full of it. And I think I think it just makes for a better football club as well, because you get a better vibe around it, you know, and you don't want too much of the same thing, but you've got a little bit of a different thing going on all over. So Kelly Jade, who does our academy, she's directing our coaches, who used to be professional players, in what she wants to see them coach every morning, which is terrific. I want you to do this. I want you to do that. And she answers to me, the chairman, not answers to me, because she read it and I'll let her get on with it. But she's terrific. Kelly Jade used to be centre forward for our ladies team as well. And she played in America. So I'm afraid I'm with the girls and not with that chap who wrote in.
Fair enough, next time, Patrick.
While we're on the subject of ladies in football, two clubs actually asked me, and I put it out there, Ware Football Club and Grays FC as well, both looking for new physio. So anybody out there that wants to, male, female, that wants to get involved in non-league football, what a great opportunity. And if you want to extend your knowledge in physio, physiotherapy, why not get in touch with either Ware or Grays? And if you haven't got a number, I don't know where to find them, drop me a line and we'll put you in touch with either Grays or Ware, whichever may be the closest to you. But a great opportunity to get yourself in at non-league football.
You're like a physio agent now, Dave.
It's like you should do morning television.
Yeah. I know. He's a physio in disguise, isn't he?
He is, yeah. I've been converted in my thing. We've browbeat him into being one of us.
No, Tony, as an ex-West Ham player, are you actually a West Ham fan as well?
I'm half and half with Fulham, I've got to be honest, because that's where I started my career.
So growing up, who did you support when you were a boy? Who did you and your dad go to watch?
Oh, that's a very good question, see? So I supported Chelsea, you wouldn't believe, would you? So my dad was a season ticket holder at Chelsea. He only had two season tickets, him and my uncle, but four of us used to sit on the two seats because we used to bunk in. So that's what you used to do.
That's such an Irish thing to do.
We used to slide the kids under the turnstile, didn't you? Before it clicked. And that's how we did. You know, pretend it was, oh, hurry up, Sanso's getting through under the turnstile. And then you're in the ground. But Chelsea, grew up supporting Chelsea, bunking off school, going to watch them train down at Stamford Bridge on a Friday, where they trained in the forecourt. Can you imagine this from a physiotherapist point of view? Training on a concrete forecourt with drainage there and everything, having a five-a-side on a Friday with about 200 or 300 people watching. And it was full-blown five-a-side. So you go and watch them. What a way to grow up that was. And then, of course, when I signed for Fulham, all the Chelsea stuff went out the window because Fulham and Chelsea were rivals. So and I signed for Fulham at 12. So Fulham.
Did your dad keep the Chelsea going or did he move his loyalties because of you?
Well, it's funny because my contract was up, it just was the independent tribunal time. Dave will know, you two girls are too young, but it started when when your contract ran up, you became a free transfer and you had to go to a tribunal to get your transfer fee regulated. So it was up and I let it run out on purpose. So I had the privilege of moving. So whoever signed me wouldn't have to pay so much. So West Ham come in to sign me. Who comes in to sign me on the same day? Chelsea. And now I used to support Chelsea and I rang my dad and I went, I can't believe it. I said, Dad, I'm meeting West Ham today and I'm meeting Chelsea at 11 o'clock and I'm meeting West Ham at 1 o'clock. So he went, oh, you've got to sign for Chelsea. You've got to sign for Chelsea. Like all the family support Chelsea. Yeah, we were Chelsea season ticket holders and all that. Anyway, met Chelsea, met West Ham. No brainer. It was West Ham. So I rang him and he went, fair play, son. That's all right. That's all right. He forgave me. But John... Ali, you're too young again. John Lyle was a brilliant manager. Brilliant manager.
Oh, that's lovely. It's nice when like you find out what pros used to support or where their loyalties lie.
Yeah, so you might get a few sort of biased commentaries when I'm doing it. Yeah.
Someone who you did a big favour for me for, Tony, a few months ago, Adam Silver has come in and he's basically said, I watched Tony Gale on a West Ham YouTube channel where ex-players gave their best 11. He put himself in defence on penalties, corners, free kicks and manager, I believe.
Yeah, I wasn't short on confidence, Dave. No, quite often you get asked, you know, of all the players that you've played with, what's the best 11, you know? So I always put myself as captain and then I put the other 10 around me, you know.
Why not? That's absolutely.
Your team. So, and who's the best player you've played against?
Well.
Or who did you kind of think, yeah, that's
this amazing. This sounds like I'm sort of siding with you all the time, doesn't it? So, Ali, sorry about this, but the best player I played against, because strikers came in pairs in those days.
Yeah.
And the best pair was Rush and Dalglish, without a shadow of a doubt. And Kenny later became my manager, but Rush and Dalglish were absolutely brilliant. One was lightning quick, Ian Rush, and he had reflexes that, you know, you couldn't train. It was just naturally quick. And Kenny had the super brain, great passer of a ball, you know, and was the all-round footballer. And that Liverpool side was definitely, I know this one's good, but it was definitely better. With a Rush, Dalglish, yeah. Graham Souness.
That was what, the 80s?
Alan Anthony, Mark Lawrenson.
Yeah.
How about if I take you even further back and say that my favourite pair, if, you know, not going, I mean, you'd go as far as somebody like Henri and Bergkamp, but for me, going back, the ones that I enjoyed watching the most, because I used to go with my dad to watch them all the time, was down at Orient. It would be Peter Kitchen and John Chidozie.
Peter Kitchen played with me at Fulham. He came to Fulham at the end of his career, Peter Kitchen. He had the biggest nose I've ever seen. He really had. And no one had ever pointed out to that him at Orient. And as soon as he came in, we used to call him Fireman's, because Fireman's O's nose, you know. And he didn't get it because he was a Northerner and he didn't get the rhyming slang. He was like, oh, here comes Fireman's. And he never really got it. But John Chidozie, I played with for England Youth, another 21. One of the quickest players I've ever played with against, you know, John. What a lovely lad as well. Came from Nigeria, I think, but settled in. He sort of came in after Laurie Cunningham. He was brilliant, John.
He used to run past us so quick, it was unreal. We used to sit in the front row on that side and you'd just fly past you. And you just feel the wind as he just went flying past you. He was so quick. He was just incredible.
Yeah, well, we just used to kick him. We kicked him, stopped him running.
No, he's an all-year defender.
No, he's I see. Do you remember Julian Dix, Ali?
Yes.
For Liverpool too.
John Chidozie playing against Julian. Oh, that was like he definitely had the beating for Julian at pace, but he was having kittens whenever Julian went near him, you know.
I can imagine what might happen. I can imagine the physio being ready with a bag, just ready to run on.
Julian's well, it was quite another
funny He ran so fast, but if you ran at an angle at West Ham, if you're running down a line, slightly at an angle, well, you know how close the chicken run was? It was about, I would say, not exaggerating, about 2 yards, 3 yards away. So Julian had this art of letting the winger get in front of him, nudge him, and he'd go bang, he'd go flying into the chicken run. You know, and you couldn't, he wouldn't come out for 5 minutes. I'd see John coming out like, oh, you know.
Julian's another player though that's come from pro game into non-league, because when I was at Brentwood, Julian was the manager at
Grays.
Heybridge
Swifts. Yeah, he had a spell there, didn't he? Yeah. Then he recently he was with Slaven at West Bromwich Albion.
Yeah, he went back pro after being at Heybridge.
Let me ask you two a question.
Oh Christ.
Who were your favourite, or who are your favourite players?
Ali, you go first.
Pro or not? Or non-league?
Pro first. Pro, go on.
do you know what? It's a bit cliche. I've got a massive soft spot for Mark Noble. I know he's coming towards the end now, but he's been an amazing pro. And whenever I see him warming up and coming on now, even I'm like, still, he's a West Ham boy. He's always been involved. I like Henderson as well, but a kind of player that I like, sort of, dare I say, no frills, gets involved, wins the ball, does his job well. Without them, teams don't function, but they don't get all the glory. I think
Does that mean you were a central midfield player if you're choosing?
No, I was a winger, just trying not to get kicked. I was terrified playing football. And I went, you know what, I'm done with this, I might be a physio instead. And that's where that one came from. I think in non-league, I probably got two. They're both at Cray. One's Bradley Pritchard, who frankly is amazing gentleman and amazing player. I think what he's done for his career, he's been a pro as well. I think Ben Mundell's probably my favourite. I think he, on his day, he's a wonderful footballer. I really hope he still has the chance to make it and go pro. I think he still can. Oh, don't tell him, though. He's got a big enough head as it is.
I'll have a look at them. I might try and poach him for Walton Casuals.
Ben's budget for physio will bankrupt the club. Don't bother.
I remember Cray with a little bit of fondness because we went up into our league. We got promoted. We beat them in the semi-final.
I'm going to do this for a bit. I sobbed after that game, honestly. Tony, I sobbed after that game for about an hour. I was inconsolable.
I'm sure that was a game.
I was actually commentating at a game. Mm. And like Anthony was in charge, obviously. My son was in charge. And I'm thinking, oh, because Cray were a good team at the time, weren't they? You were going for the season. And I knew the guys in charge. And they'd actually put a lot of money into the club. They're really good guys. Mm. And like I felt, of all the clubs that deserved to go up that season, if it weren't us, I was hoping they'd go up because I really got on with them quite well. Mm. And I rung them before the game to say, oh, I can't get there, like really gutted, I'm commentating. But I was commentating their game and the score's coming through on my text. And I got to be honest, I was shitting myself and I was thinking, oh, sorry, you made me swear, Emily. I wanted to swear, you made me swear.
Tony's come to the dark side.
and then all of a sudden you had someone sent off, didn't you?
Yeah.
And we went on to win. I think we won it by a few goals in the end, didn't we?
Yeah, but it was a heartbreaking one. It was a great football game for the neutral. For a Cray person, not so much. Because you'd done us earlier in the season by the same result as well. So it's a bit like deja vu.
Didn't we draw in that game? I think we got a late equaliser.
We had a 2-2, we had a 5-3, and we had a 5-3 again. As I said, two teams that were just flowing up front, basically.
A great game because we went over to watch and it wasn't the biggest of crowds, but because you know, I like to stand on my own because if I go to the game, everyone wants to talk to me and I can't watch the bloody game. Do you know what I mean? Oh, what about West Ham? What about this? What about nothing? Oh, piss off. I want to watch this game. I've done it again. Look, sorry. I went over to the other side, the opposite side, you know, where your dugouts are. And I stood behind the dugout. And I remember I was with two or three of my mates and we scored a late equaliser. Our left winger cut in, fired it into the top corner. And we went mad, all three of us over the other side of the ground. Looked like a load of little three idiots running up and down the terraces, yeah. What about you, Em? Who's your favourite player?
My favourite player is Stevie G.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I love him. And I had a real soft spot for Sergio Ramos as well until he dislocated Mo Salah's shoulder and then he went to the bottom of the pile. But my uncle who supports West Ham and my other uncle who supports Leeds, funny that you mentioned them as well, they came to watch me play when I was younger and when I could play without my knees giving up. And they said to my mum, she plays an awful lot like Chopper Harris. My mum was like, please stop referring to her as bloke.
It's funny, Stevie G got a nice story about him. So I hadn't met him before. So obviously I retired before Stevie G was coming. So I was just commentating on him. But I always used to eulogise about him because I thought he was one of the great players. And I first saw him make his debut for Liverpool. He was a right back, I think, at Highbury. So, and I was commentating. I said, this kid's going to go on. Not just as a right back anywhere. Anyway, he was one of the best, wasn't he? One of the best around. Never met him. And I went over, I was in Dubai on holiday with my missus. And we'd gone down the first morning for breakfast. Just eating our breakfast. And over the far side, I went to her and said, that looks like Stevie G over there. You know, I've never met him before. And she went, no, it just looks like him. And he sort of had a little entourage around him, his wife, his kids and nannies and God knows what, you know. So I sort of looked over and I nodded, you know, and I thought, oh, I'm not going to go over and say hello because it looks a bit off. But he came over to me. Now, he's a world-class player and I was a good player, but he was a world-class player. And he came over to me to say hello. How are you? What are you doing on holiday? Spoke to my missus as well. He'd just taken over the Glasgow Rangers job and he sat with us for 10 minutes at the breakfast table and he was first class. So if anybody says anything bad about it, about him. Don't have it. He's a top fella and a super.
I met him once. Arsenal were playing Liverpool, and I had arranged to meet the Liverpool physio, Chris Morgan, in the hotel in London that Liverpool were staying at, for a coffee. And I was waiting for him, and this guy was walking towards me, and I was like, oh my God, that's Stevie G. And I actually started to vibrate. I was like, oh my God. And I was like, play it cool. No, grabbed my diary, ran over. And as I was walking over, I hit like a bump in the carpet or in the floor, and I tripped. No. And as I tripped, I grabbed the arm of his chair. No problem. If he hadn't been holding a scalding hot cup of tea in his hand. He didn't spill it, to be fair to him. And he went, are you all right? And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And he was like, you're all right. And his agent was on the floor. His agent was belly laughing. And I thought, oh, Emily. So I went to him, well, will you sign my diary? So he signed it and he caught my hand and he went, are you sure you're okay? And I was like, And I walked away. And all I could see in my head was headlines. Liverpool captain scalded by psycho Irish woman asking for autograph. I was like, oh my God. But yeah, he's a lovely fella. And yeah, he's amazing. He's a great player. And I'm so happy he's doing so well at Rangers. Like, I obviously don't support Rangers, but I'm fabulous.
He's very great. And I mean, Mark Noble's not as obviously as good a player as Stevie G, but he's certainly he's a perfect gentleman as well. He's a lovely lad, you know, and although he's coming to the end of his days, I'm sure West Ham will try and keep him on in some kind of role, because you need people like that there. And I think David Moyes knows that as well. He's not silly, you know.
Do you think Chelsea were silly to give up on Lamp so early?
I don't think Frank was doing the job because he didn't get the results. But if anyone deserved more time because of what he'd given to the club before, it would have been Frank for me. So I just believe that Abramovich treated him like he's treated all the other managers that he's had. And I do believe that Frank is such a good pro that he wouldn't have expected anything less from a governor employing him. And that is the remit at Chelsea. You've got hit the floor running, and he'd done a great job the year before. Don't forget they had the transfer embargo on.
Yeah, they had no spend.
Exactly. So he had to bring all the kids in. And then all of a sudden, everybody thinks that money's the governor, and you're going to get better by having a lot of money. They had a lot of money, signed a lot more players, but they lost a lot of that team unity that they had. You know, when they signed Havertz and Werner, they come in, you know, and they kind of lost it. But this guy's getting it a bit together now, but he's had a run of fixtures that's been very kind to him so far.
So what do you think about then Gerrard versus Lampard in the future? So rumours I saw on Sky Sports of Lampard going to Celtic.
That'd be a good one, wouldn't it? I mean, Stevie G's done a brilliant job up there. God, he's turned, you know, I went up there two seasons ago to watch the Old Firm derby because I'd never been to one. And next teammate of mine, Frank McAvenny. Remember that one, Ali? Frank McAvenny? Yeah.
Well. It's also the Frank McAvenny car park from Soccer AM, isn't it, as well? Love a bit of Soccer AM. I used to anyway.
He invited me up there to something different, the Old Firm derby. Oh, really brilliant. Yeah, they had a great weekend up there. Yeah, I can't even remember the game, to be honest, because I was with Frank McAvenny.
When you go to Scotland to watch a game, like you black out, I promise. It's happened to me on a number of occasions.
Well, I can't wait till we all go back. Hopefully, it looks like we may get back for the last game of the season, you know, so. But it's we have missed it.
Adam Silver's come in and said, imagine some of the players Tony played with gracing the immaculate surfaces of today's pitches.
Well, exactly. I mean, I was fortunate. I played with George Best at Fulham. You know, I was in the team with George, so I was only 17. So George was one of the best players in the world. And the rules, the football rules as they were then, you know, players got kicked a lot more. Alan Devonshire at West Ham, he was one of the best players I've ever played with. Liam Brady at West Ham. Wow. I'm talking about ball players. McAvenny, Cotty.
And you know, Liam Brady.
We had some terrific players I've played with. And I think the pitches of today would have certainly suited. I mean, the way I played, I was a kind of footballing defender. So these pitches would have suited me as well. It certainly suited our West Ham team of old, because we like to get it down and play. And maybe the pitches caught us out at times because they were a bit heavy or sandy or whatever. But I'd love to have seen us play on these pitches. I envy the pitches. Girls, these pitches are the Premier League pitches. There is not a bad pitch. And even if you go down to Championship level, which I do and do the games, League One, the pitches are immaculate now. Hardly a bad pitch about till we go to Cray Wanderers.
You mean the 4G?
It's our 4G.
Alec, we got one as well. So I was only taking.
To be fair, Flamingo Park isn't quite as pristine on its day, but it's getting there.
But I'd sooner play on a 4G than some of the crap non-league pitches that we go to. At least you know what you're getting every week, didn't you?
Yeah.
What do you think? You two are physios. Mm. Do you think there's more injuries from a 4G or a grass? I don't think there is more injuries.
I think it's quite early days in its inception at the moment. I think you'll know more in 10, 15 years' time. But I think you lose those lovely ankle turns, the ACLs where the foot gets stuck. I think you miss out all the trench foot you get from when it's too wet and boggy and, you know, or when it's really, really hard ground because it's been hot. So therefore you get head injury because you hit the foot head on the floor. I think you get a lot more of the old 3G burns, which are a bit nastier when they want to be. But for me, my players have adapted to it. That I get far less injuries from it. Mm. I love it. And my boots stay mudless, which is perfect for me, really.
And I get a little bit pissed off when they come down and they lose a game to us on the 4G and they blame it on the pitch. You know, they go, oh, I can't believe it. You're used to the 4G. Yeah. And I go, no, we used to playing football. Yeah. You know, we don't want to go onto a muddy pitch or a bobbly pitch or a pitch where the grass is like up here. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because there's not many good grass pitches at our level, you know.
I knew what I liked to, Tone. I'm all for 3G, 4G pitches as well.
Well, certainly, Dave, for kids' technique as well. Mm. You know, and you can be on them all day and all night and it won't hurt it, will it?
Couple of questions that have just come in. One for me, I suppose, more than anything else. You mentioned an absolute legend when you were just talking just a minute ago, or two legends. But one of my favourite players when I was a kid, Liam Brady, probably one of the best Arsenal players of all time for me. I think he's absolutely fantastic. But you can't skip over what you said. What was it like to play with the greatest football player of all time? For me, everybody talks about Pelé, Messi, Ronaldo. There's only one player that is the greatest player of all time, and that's Mr. George Best.
Well, George came from Man United and he came to Fulham. You know, he's at that little bit of a time when he was having a little bit of turmoil in his life. But Fulham, say, gave him that sort of that home and that home that he wanted, obviously, the way the London scene was at the time, you know, everybody going out and everything. It suited George down to the ground. And the fact that two of his mates were there, Bobby Moore and Rodney Marsh as well, who were, you know, international players and world-renowned players as well. But George Best used to do things in training and indeed on a Saturday that I have never seen before. Just incredible. His vision. Although he had a little bit of a drink problem at the time, every time he missed the training session, because he was the only one who was given that concession by the manager, he'd come in the afternoon and he'd work twice as hard in the afternoon. And when we did have a running session, and we all did it together, he was always at the front. Mm. So he had a natural fitness about him, a natural skill, and just an unbelievable brain, footballing brain. And you, honestly, his feet were so quick, it was like mesmerising them. And when he was in training and he was on song and you had to do a one-on-one with him, it was incredible. You know, you might as well just give up. You go, oh, go on, go through. I ain't going to make myself look an idiot in a one-on-one. So he used to twist you right, left, right, left. That one, I'm sure you ladies have seen it, when he feints the shoot with his left, brings it on his right, feints the shoot with his right, brings it on his left. And you think every time he's going to shoot, and you dive in, you go on your ass, dive in, go on your ass, and he just used to stand there laughing, you know what I mean? And I just thought he was brilliant. He's so good to us. Mm. We were kids at the time, and those three guys were so good to us, you know, really good. What a great upbringing we had.
Yeah. Well, JF... somebody's just come in and said, a bit off topic, sorry, Tony, in brackets, but ladies, interested to know whether, given the fact that steps 2 to 6 have stopped their seasons, do you think physios within those levels will be dropping down if leagues at step 7 and below continue? I assume paying money for physios at that level may be a struggle for most, but interested to see if there is a demand.
Obviously, I'm already at the Dons on a Sunday, so I think they've already... Some teams suddenly do really have physios around, and the bigger clubs... I mean, I can see it happening for getting experience, for getting your hand in, for missing football and trying to do a little bit. But I doubt anyone will have a budget for physios at that point, to be honest. I mean, a lot of clubs at our level struggle for budgets for physios, to be honest. I get a lot of, do you know someone who can do this for free for us? And you go, oh, you know, you're asking for three nights a week and a Saturday. You're probably not going to get, no one's going to come for free for that. But I don't know about your feelings, Ems, on that.
No, same. I don't, like, I obviously, moving forward, because Grassroots is back, my under-18s are back, which I'm delighted about, and I can't wait to see them all. We had a Zoom the other night for fitness, which, well, I didn't attend. But I had great intentions, but I ended up doing something else. So on Sundays, I'll be busy with the boys, which I'm so looking forward to, because when I say they're a special bunch of lads, like, they won everything last season. They were set to win a treble, and then it was taken off them because the first set of COVID arrived. Mm. And in September, we got a chance to play one of our cup finals, and we won brilliantly. And then obviously it all happened again. So it's been stop start, and it's their last year in football. So I'll be back with them. So I'm looking forward to it. But like Ali said, there's a lot of people out there, especially at our level, let alone steps seven down, saying like, oh, any chance you could do physio for free? And I'm like, do you go into Marks and Spencer's and ask them for your shopping for free? No, sorry.
We are like Marks and Sparks, aren't we, physios as well? I love that. Not Lidl.
No, darling. We're the creme de la creme.
You girls have other jobs to supplement what you're doing as physios, or are you full-time physios?
So I work in the NHS full-time
as well.
So yeah.
Ali's our superhero.
Been a little bit busy, you know.
And I do IT. I'm a PE teacher with children with special educational needs.
Oh, that's terrific. It's just, I mean, it's really hard, isn't it, to get a full-time job in non-league, because obviously, you know, I know what we pay our guys, but it's not, they aren't the best paid jobs, are they? But they're great experience-wise. And if you do get that little bit of a lever where an opportunity comes in where you can go into a pro club, you just got to put in your applications, haven't you? You know, just like making it as a player, isn't it?
I did apply for the massage therapist position at Liverpool when it came up in the summer, along with about 180,000 other people.
No, but you've got the qualification, so you just have to keep doing it, didn't you?
Yeah, 100%.
And I think, you know, like I say to Anthony, like my son as a manager and our coaches, look, you got to start somewhere. Mm. You know, you got to start somewhere, and this is a great place to start.
But the thing is, Tony, I looked after Welling for a summer while they were trying to find a physio, and we played Watford in a pre-season friendly, and it was mainly the under-23s and a couple of first-team players coming back from injury. And their physio pulled me aside and he said, non-league is the hardest job you'll ever do. He said, so if you can do non-league on your own every Saturday and get a team through, he said, when you go to pro level, you're a bit like, because there's so many people to do so many jobs.
And they say non-league's part-time. It isn't, is it?
You know, no, it's certainly not.
As my manager, my son keeps telling me, oh, my phone ain't stopped going. Oh, my phone ain't stopped going, you know. You know, and he does one-on-one training, you know. He does with kids and adults as well. So, you know, but, I mean, he's busy. But there's so many more jobs now within football. You know, I go on a TV gantry. Bloody hell, you're just about fit up there to do the commentary. I mean, Sky's paying about £130 million. And you've got Prozone, you've got all the trackers, you've got this, you've got that, everyone up there. And I think every club now in the background, especially Premier League, you know, you're talking about a backroom staff of like hundreds, aren't you?
Mm.
You know?
Well, Adrian,
you can't move, can you, with one of those vests on? Oh, you've been down Sainsbury's? You go, oh yeah.
Well, Adrian's come back in and he said, though, who would Tony say is the manager that had the biggest influence on his career?
My first one, because he gave me my chance, Bobby Campbell. So I was 16 and he put me in the team. 16, you know, Bobby Moore just retired and I took over from Bobby Moore. So he gave me my chance at 16. I was captain of Fulham in the second division at 18. So he put all his faith in me. You know, I must have been good, I suppose, but still, you have to have someone who's got faith in you to put you in, you know, and you do have bad games when you start off and they, you know, they could easily leave you out. But I never, ever got left out. Once I was in the team, I don't think I was ever dropped. Mm-hmm. So I always have him to thank. And And like he was just brilliant. He was with, he was the guy that took over your Arsenal man, Dave. He had Liam Brady, Frank Stapleton, and David O'Leary at the Arsenal when he was a coach there. So he was all for putting young players in teams. And I was fortunate enough that he came to Fulham and he put a lot of young players in, me being one of them. So he was the biggest influence, Bobby Campbell. John Lyle was the best manager, but he was the biggest influence.
Ali, I always say your shoes were big to fill. Tony went and filled Bobby Moore's shoes.
I'm going to say. No pressure.
Busy wins.
You go to Fulham and you're taking over from Bobby Moore. And obviously, like, oh, Moro did it this way. Moro did it. Obviously, yeah. He was the best defender in the world. He was my hero, you know. So, and then you go to West Ham, and guess who was at West Ham? Bobby Moore. So I'm filling West Ham shoes. So I had this little interim where I went to Blackburn, you know, and we'd done what we did at Blackburn and Palace, and I had a little spell there. And then I go and work for Capital Gold Radio. Guess who I take over from? Bobby Moore.
Do you think, Tony, do you think clubs on a professional level, some do it fantastically well, some don't? And I spoke to a manager the other day actually about this, and I just, it'd be interesting to hear your take on it. At our level, I find that as well, you might disagree with me, but at our level, I find that when you get to a certain level, you don't tend to trust the under-23s and the under-18s coming through from your club. Not all of them. You'll always find one who's really good and you take them through and you nurture them and you bring them through. But then when they're that good, they end up leaving or they go higher, which is fine. But do you find that at the Premier League level as well, they're quite bad at doing that? They'll buy in from clubs rather than farm someone from their own clubs? And do you think it should be more looked at?
Yeah, they should be. Does that make sense? You have to understand the pressure on a manager. The manager's got to get results, because if the manager don't get results, he's out. And no one's going to say, oh, yeah, but he brought on three really good kids. No, they forget all about that, don't they? You know. So the pressure's on the manager. So these kids get their opportunity normally in UEFA Cup or, you know, Carlsberg Cup or League Cup or whatever they're calling it now, whatever the sponsor's name is. So they play in those competitions. So you have really got to take your chance. Like Maitland-Niles has at Arsenal. He makes a few appearances in the cup competitions, does really well, and then all of a sudden he's in, same as Saka. They come in, and now they're part of it, aren't they? They're probably the best players, and it's around them. But as soon as you go in, you've got to take your chance. You can't hang about. You can't be a shrinking violet. So it's not only what you've got on a football pitch in ability, it's what you've got up here, strength of mind. And like, you got to go into a dressing room and you got to belong. You girls have been in a dressing room with your manager. You get a new player coming. You know that straight away, don't you? You're there listening to the manager doing his team talk, the coaches. You know if that player's going to play well or he's shitting himself if he's a new kid coming, don't you? And you can see it. You can see it. And don't forget, other players can see that as well when a young player comes in. I was lucky. I had a load of help from really good senior players, you know. And it was my first game was at Leighton Orient when I was 16. And I was just running out the tunnel. And like, I had all the backslapping from everyone. Good luck, your debut. And then our centre forward, who was Viv Busby at the time, stops me from running out. He pulls me back and he goes, Tone, don't forget, everybody said well done, but don't if him make any mistakes here. We're playing for 75 quid bonus. We're playing for a 75 quid bonus.
75 so, quid.
Yeah, that was the reality of it. Okay, well done. You're in the first team. Great. All your family get, you know, 100 tickets. Everybody's coming. But hold on a minute. You got to do the business now when you're in there. So those guys were good to, you know, give you the old backslapping. Then they give you the reminder as well. It's hard for kids now. But it's certainly, I even think it was harder in our day. It was harder in our day, but you had to, they get the pressure taken off of them now, don't they? I mean, you can't shout at someone in a dressing room. You'll probably be in front of HR, wouldn't you, if you shouted at someone in a dressing room. Like, yeah, you can't shout at me. I don't believe that, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the things that used to go on in the dressing rooms in the past, you had to kind of, you know, take it on the chin and get on with it.
Well, someone's coming with last question. We've got to let you go, but
we have to, Dave. Can we just keep going?
I'm all right, Dave. I ain't doing nothing. There's a pandemic going on, by the way.
Right, so Adam Silver's come back in and said, Tony, said I've been listening for nearly an hour.
Is he the only one? Is the only one listening to the show?
Listen, hey, mate,
Tony, we have 1,700 listeners. Thank you very much.
Oh, sorry.
He said, Tony, he said, I've been listening for nearly an hour and you've not mentioned your free kick against Liverpool once.
Do it, Tony. I
can't hurt my feelings.
Half hour gone on the clock. Free kick. 25 yards out. Left side of the penalty area. We're playing Liverpool, who were the European champions the year before. Listen in, Emily. Don't start drinking a glass of water while I'm talking.
It's right? Gin, Tony. It's to ease the pain.
You're going to need a gin and tonic after this one. Anyway, throwed up over the top of the free kick, over the top of the wall, slid it into the far corner and go off and rejoice. We beat Liverpool 4-1 in the League Cup that night. So they were a great team. They were a great team. But we won 4-1. So thanks to our one listener for reminding me.
Talking about Liverpool, I remember speaking to an old colleague of yours, and you mentioned him a couple of times, Julian Dix. And I don't know if you think this is the same, would be the same thing, but he once said to me, he said, when he was at West Ham the first time, he was getting yellow cards and red cards like confetti. He said, and then he got transferred to Liverpool. He went off to Liverpool. He said, and while I was at Liverpool, he said, I never had one single yellow card in all the time I was at Liverpool. He said, but the minute I went back, he said, on my first game, my first challenge I had for West Ham when I went back, he said, I got a yellow. He said that basically referees treat the bigger clubs different to the smaller clubs.
Yes and no. Dixie was a lunatic as well, by the way. So he probably deserved about three quarters of his yellow cards. He's one of the nice, I call him a nice lunatic, Julian. You want him on your side. He was a great player, a really good footballer. Because of his hard man image, everybody forgot what a good footballer he was. But probably he was playing in that Liverpool side. I remember at the time, Neil Ruddock was in the team. They had a few hard players. It was that transitional spell. Graham Souness was manager, I do believe, Emily, then. So they was going through that spell where probably the yellow cards were getting shared out a little bit more, where he was the only thug we had at West Ham.
Yeah, we had a few at Liverpool. It was fine. They were doing out.
Now, Dixie was a terrific player. Probably the best left-back I played with. Yeah, really good. And I played with some good ones, but he was the best. Yeah.
So, Tony, serious question now, and Ali might, like, shrink in her skin here. And I'll ask Ali the same question. Best West Ham player in your opinion?
What, now?
Best West Ham player now, in the past, in the present, whenever, just your best West Ham player. You think, Jesus, he was good.
Tony Gow.
You can't vote for yourself.
You can't pick yourself, can you?
You can't vote for yourself. It's like being in school. You can't vote for yourself.
Can I be captain again? Can I be captain again?
Yeah.
You can if you tell me who you think the best player is.
The best player at West Ham, without a doubt, that I played with was Alan Devonshire, that I played with. Now, if you go through the history of West Ham, then it has to be, for me, Bobby Moore. So that's how I'll go then. But Alan Devonshire was the best one in my 10 years that I was there, I played with. I'm going to flip it over to you now, Ali.
Do you know what? I've always, for me, Trevor Brooking, he's generally, I love watching him play, and also the nicest person I've ever met in football. He's got so much time to talk to you. I met him at an FA dinner my uncle went to. He dragged me along because he was going to be there. And I've got a picture. We spent about 20 minutes chatting about physio and about how to get into football. I was quite young at the time. Lovely guy, lovely footballer. That's probably mine, to be honest.
Go on, I'm sorry.
I said I'll fly the flag for my uncle. I think his favourite player of all time at West Ham was Jeff Hurst.
Oh, there you go. When Trevor retired the year that I came to West Ham, so I never played with him, but obviously I bump into him all the time. I play golf with him, and as you say, like we all call him Sir Trevor. He is Sir Trevor, but not many people call people Sir, do they? But we call him Sir Trev. But we played golf for this charity thing. Some guys paid to play for us for one of these kids charities that was auctioned off. So it's me and Trevor against these two guys. So we go over Fort Bay, we played at Fort Hall down in Southend. So we go to play over there. We meet them before. They play, they're two mad West Ham fans. So they're talking, they're right, you know, right lads, you know what I mean? Oh, we really wanted to play with you. No, Sir Trev and Tone, like, terrific. You know, looking forward to all the stories going around and all that. And I said, look, let's get a bit serious, lads. Us two, me and Sir Trev, against you two at golf. So let's have a little laugh, but, you know, let's have a few quid on it and get a bit serious. So anyway, the geezer's hit the ball. He's hit it 200 yards down there. And the other one is not very good. He's hit it to the right. So I got up for us and I've hit it 200 yards down the middle. So lucky, we've got one of us in play. So Trev's about to have his first shot. A lot of the people see Sir Trev playing. So they come over to watch him hit his shot. So he's gone like this, right? Gone like that, took the club back, and he's gone under the ball, and it's just plopped up in the air and plopped in front of him like that. Now, Sir Trev mentioned a four-letter word. This is what a gentleman he is. He went, gosh.
Oh, what a legend, honestly.
No, he needs to go to the MS language.
You wouldn't be disappointed, Ali. He is a gentleman, it's incredible.
As I said, honestly, I was quite a young physio when I met him, and I was so nervous. I went up to him with my dad and my uncle, and he generally spent 20 minutes chatting to me about football and about going, you know, it's so great what I was doing. Don't give up, you know, don't worry about what you're doing. You know, honestly, it meant the world to me that evening. It really did.
No, he's got the beauty of guys like that who've done it at the top level, and they've still got time for it, and they talk to everyone the same, whether he's talking to a fellow player or he's talking to a young lady physio, young boy physio or whatever. He's got time for everyone. Another gentleman is Billy Bonds, who played with Trevor. Exactly the same.
I'm sure I saw him in Wakefield and bought him one day. He was lovely.
You might need to change alliances.
Don't tempt me.
Tony, when you said that when you were on holidays in Dubai, Stevie G came over to you and sat with you and your wife and started chatting.
And I remember being, you showed him his scald burn on his hand.
Well, can we not talk about that, please? When I was uptown one Christmas, I met Roy Hodgson. It wasn't long after he'd been relieved of his duties at Liverpool. And I was like, oh my goodness. And my boyfriend's like, don't. And I spoke to him and he spoke to me and he's such a lovely man. Like, he's a gentleman. Like you just said about Trevor Rook, this guy is an absolute gentleman. But his wife literally looked at me. She was like, oh, and rolled her eyes. No, I get it.
Yeah.
Like, he's probably been stopped by about 200 people. Does your wife get frustrated when you guys get stopped if you're on family time?
No, she's all right with it, actually. She's okay with it. I'm all right with it as well. You know, I don't mind. It's when people, there's the odd one that goes over the top. You know what I mean? If you, for instance, not that we've been out for a drink for a long time, but if you go into London and you get the last train back, the Liverpool Street one, you know, the boozy one when everybody's had a booze on a Friday night and you're coming back, then you're sitting on the train and we're coming back after going for a meal in London. Mm-hmm. And you're sitting in the back like that, and then someone recognises you, and you go, oh, for God's sake, I just want to get home. And you've had a drink, you know what I mean? And they come over, and they plonk themselves next to you, and they go through every game that West Ham's played, you know, like, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then that is the one that kind of gets on your nerves. But I understand people coming up. And listen, we're lucky that people come up to say hello or want an autograph or a picture or whatever they do now. But no, I would never poo-poo some. Roy Hodgson, I know very well. He is a gentleman. You're right.
Oh, he's so lovely. He's a lovely man. Yeah. And there's another man. I don't know if you've worked or met him or come across him. Peter Reid. Every time I see him, I'm just like, I just want to hug him. And everyone's like, oh, he's really hard, man. And I'm like, he looks at my granddad. I just want to hug him.
You're starting to feel sorry for us. I mean, we used to be heartthrobs. Now the girls feel sorry for us.
I did feel sorry for us. I said I wanted to cuddle them.
I think Trevor's still a heartthrob, in my opinion. He's,
Stevie G is definitely a heartthrob.
Used to be We used to be page five geezers. Now that no one looks at us, you know what I mean? They feel sorry for us.
Trevor Brooke gave me my biggest, one of our biggest nightmares when he scored that goal in 1980. But there we go.
Oh, great goal.
Did he? Well, am I right? So wasn't he the player for England when he hit the shot that got stuck in the stanchion as well?
Yeah, that was against Hungary, wasn't it? When they beat, he played. He used to be playing with Kevin Keegan, and they had that great relationship, didn't they? Him and Kevin. Like Kevin played up front, Trevor just played behind. But Trevor was a two-footed player. He was a brilliant player. You know, in the days of muddy pitches at West Ham, if you watch the old films, like muddy pitches, tightly drawn nets on the goals. You know, when the ball used to hit the net, it used to come back out. Oh, it was different class. Everything's a little bit antiseptic now. Everything's perfect, isn't it? Where
with Tony back then, perfect. The shorts were a lot shorter as well.
Yeah, you're permanently fishing them out your bum. That was a problem, wasn't it?
The long legs and the short shorts.
Richard Green has just come in and said, I saw Alan Devonshire play for Southall and Ealing Borough against Dulwich Hamlet in the FA Cup in 1974-ish. Won the game and single-handedly with two goals. Good to see him now enjoyed success in a managerial role at Maidenhead United, and he was superb in defeat against Cray Valley in the FA Cup this year.
Yeah, and I went to see him on Tuesday. I was at the Brentford game on Wednesday. I was working for Sky Wednesday. So Tuesday, I rung Dev up, see if he could get us in the ground, and I was lucky enough to get in the ground because I was scouting, you know, whatever, because you're not allowed in the grounds now, are you? But I went to watch him play. They played Aldershot. They lost 4-2. But he's different class then. Even as a manager, you know, the respect that them young lads had for him down at Maidenhead and the relationship he's got with his chairman, they're just moving to a new, I think next year, Dave, or the year after, they're moving to a new ground. And Dev and his chairman have worked that all out all along the way. And already they've got enough points that they're safe in the National League at the moment. And probably, you know, they've probably got one of the lowest budgets and they do excellent. You know, it's easy to do well in non-league when you've got all the money, isn't it? But not when you've got a budget as he's got. And he just churns results out every year. Brilliant.
I mean, you guys were talking about favourite players and whatever else. I mean, for me, in sort of football itself and through the years, I mean, my favourite player was always Matt Le Tissier. And, you know, even though he was a Southampton man and he played for the one club. And sort of two questions. One, do you think Matt, if he was playing for any other team, would have had a heck of a lot more England caps? And two, do you actually think that the one club man, you know, you're not going to see that much more of that anymore?
Well, we've got one, haven't we? Mark Noble. In some ways, I think it would be lovely if Mark retires at West Ham and he becomes the one club man. You know what I mean? I consider myself a two club man. I mean, I play 330 games for Fulham and 360 for West Ham. So there's not many of us. I think there's 18 in the history of football that have played over 300 games for two clubs. So I nearly consider myself a one-club man. It's mad, isn't it, really? Because it's very, very difficult to stay at one club. So I hope Mark does it. It's going to be nigh on impossible now. But Letiz, yeah, if he'd have played for another club, yes, a bigger club, should I say, would have played and had more caps for England. Letiz was a genius. But then you have to respect the fact that he loved where he was playing and he was respected by all his players as well, that they... You know, if they had the ball, give it to Tiss and something would happen. And normally, every time they did give it to him, something did happen. Mm. He's a great player. If you watch the video of his goals, you know, his 100 goals, there's not a crap one amongst them. Everyone's a genius one. It's incredible.
He's a gentleman as well. He's a really nice fella.
Have you met him? Where did you meet him, you girls?
I met him at Sportsman's Dinner. Yeah. I was invited by my boxing coach and he was the speaker. And I like was walking in. I was like, oh, hi, nice to meet you. And he said, oh, hi. We chatted for about 10, 15 minutes. And I asked him what he thought about women in football and blah, blah, blah. And he's a really, really nice fella.
Yeah, he is. He's, you know, I've worked with him on TV, played against him. Yeah, he's a lovely fella. And he had links with Guernsey as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The league that we got out of and Cray got out of, Ali. You remember? I don't know if you Did you travel to Guernsey when you played Guernsey?
Yeah, I've been to Guernsey twice now. I've not met him, but I've only ever heard great things about him. He's not been at Guernsey when I've been at Guernsey, but the Guernsey setup and his family, they're amazing. Travelling at 7 o'clock in the morning to get home, not so much. I'm not an early bird.
But 5 a.m. the court's drunk is frowned upon also. I'm just going to say that.
We flew over there on the morning of the game. So I don't know, you did it. The night before, but we flew over there morning of the game. So I said to all the boys, right, come and just get on a plane, like blah, blah, blah. And we were staying the night after the game and flying back the next morning. So we get over there to Guernsey and all the boots didn't arrive. The plonkers didn't put their boots up in the hold. They put them underneath and the boots went off somewhere else. So I've got 7 players without football boots for the game. So I was running around Poxy Guernsey buying football boots out of shops, ringing up the lad saying, what size are you? What size are you? What make are you? What make are you? The game just about went on. We got beat 5-0. They should have played in bare feet. They'd have played better. But that was a mad journey to Guernsey. It's hard, isn't it, when you go to Guernsey?
Our Guernsey game. The first time we went over there, we stayed overnight the night of it. The second time we flew out the same day and came back the same day, and it was fog, and we got delayed by 2.5 hours. About got to the ground on time, and as soon as it finished, they had to run off the pitch. Get their stuff and get on the plane for the last plane back to the mainland, or we'd be stuck. And we scored a last minute winner, which was lovely. So actually, goal, 89th minute, celebrate, off. Don't shower, you can stink on the plane, it's fine. Straight into the plane, straight back across. We just about made it by about 10 minutes.
It's quite crazy.
No warm up, nothing. Just no. One of them games, that game.
we had the Jersey Bulls chairman on the show.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago, and he basically turned around and Keith's not a great lover of going to Guernsey either. And basically, we just talked to him and said, well, what sort of league would you be in then if you get promoted a couple of times? Which, you know, no disrespects by now, they probably could have been promoted into our leagues. And he told me, well, I think we might be in the southeast. And Keith's face just dropped, you know, going to Guernsey 1 week and Jersey the next.
You know what? It's a great experience, though. It's like international football for those of us who can't do it.
It's a great experience.
Yeah, it's a great setup over there because I went over there to there's the Jersey Irons, which is a West Ham supporters club in Jersey. So they invited me to go over and speak, you know, over in for one of their do's they had over there. So I went with the missus. So the do was at night. So we got there in the morning and we had the day to kill. So we was just walking around and we was around the corner from the ground and I heard roars. So what's going on? So Jersey Bulls were playing over there in a friendly. So, you know, on my little afternoon off, I took it to watch a game of football over in Jersey. So it was, I'll tell you what, a cracking atmosphere. Nice little stadium. And that what they've done the last two seasons, they got to be gutted, haven't they? Absolutely gutted. But there was no other choice, really.
Yeah, not lost a single game.
No, I know. It's too good, eh?
Oh, dear. But listen, Tony, it's been fantastic you joined us tonight. Really have appreciate you coming on. And, you know, if you've got another spare Friday night in the next, you know, month or so, then give us a shout. And we'd love to have you to come back on and have another chat with you because it's...
lovely.
Fantastic. It's been an absolutely fantastic evening. I've enjoyed every single minute of it. And I know the girls definitely have. So a massive thank you to you. And as I've said before... one of the nicest guys, if not the nicest guy in non-league football, and as always there to...
The nicest guy. And the captain of non-league football.
And the captain. I'm going to say captain.
You are the captain.
He's on free kick.
The captain for tonight, yeah, Tony. He's on free. You can be captain of the Essen Bank show.
Yeah. Well, listen...
I said hello.
It's a pleasure to meet you two. And hopefully I'll see you around on the circuit, eh? Non-league
circuit.
Fingers
crossed. No more playoffs, though, mate.
Exactly. I've just got to work out how to turn this thing off now, Dave, because I ain't got...
Okay. Me and Keith, we're back on Monday.
Be there for a minute.
We're back on Monday evening, me and Keith. And, of course, we've got Anthony Hughes with us, Keith Brown, Craig Johnson, all the vice chairmen are back with us. And we've got a question and answer session. So if you want to be on the show... and take a question to the three vice chairman, let us know. We'll get you a time. You can come on, give me your question, and then leave the show, and they'll answer all your questions for you on Monday night. So why not join us for that? And we've got another big guest next week, Emily, have we?
We have. We have Mr. Liam Ridgewell, who's played for Aston Villa and Portland Timbers. And he is coming on to talk to us about life after professional football and playing in America.
And there you go. Next week, Liam Ridgewell comes in. And of course, still number two to the one and only, the legend, as we've said, Mr. Tony Gow. But until then, until Monday night, until Friday night with the girls again, we'll see you then. And thank you for watching, and good night.
How'd you turn this thing off? How'd you turn